The weather in Central Ohio just got better, so why shouldn't your loan rate? CME Federal Credit Union wants to try to beat your current loan rate by 2% on autos and toys. Plus, enjoy no payments for 90 days on car loans and no payments for 60 days on motorcycles, boats, and more. With car rates as low as 4.99% APR and toy rates starting at 6.5% APR, it's the perfect time to save. Apply today at cmefcu.org.
Terms apply. Minimum floor rates, 4.99% APR cars, 6.50% APR other vehicles. Federally insured by NCUA.
The Pat Kenny Show.
With Aviva Insurance.
On News Talk.
The Kenahans have become a source of embarrassment to the elites there and to the country itself. And I think this is an informed opinion that time may be against them.
At one point, they probably would have controlled the importations from South America almost down to the distribution on the streets in our neighbourhoods. And that's been fractured somewhat now.
I'd always wanted to get shot to see how I would deal with it. And I've dealt with it perfectly, so I was happy.
I don't think they will forget what happened. Too many people have been killed, too much blood has been spilled, and people can't let go of this.
In 2022, the leaders of the Kinahan cartel were hit by a collective $15 million bounty on their heads by U.S. authorities. In the years that followed, the gang has remained active, but much less so on these shores. So as we approach the 10th anniversary of the Regency Hotel shooting next week, how has the gang been operating in those years since those U.S. sanctions and bounties? Stephen Breen and John Hand of the Irish Sun and co-authors of Kinahan Assassins are filling in the gap with their latest podcast. It's a three-parter, Kinahan's Downfall. It releases today, two parts of it, certainly. And they are with me now, Stephen Breen and John Hand. Good morning and welcome.
Good morning.
So how are the Kinahans getting on? They seem to be living quite the high life, I suppose, but where?
Well, they're under serious pressure, Pat, and they are still living the high life in Dubai. They have been there since 2017. They have immersed themselves in the society in the UAE. Of course, they will be looking around them and seeing that many other senior figures within organised crime have been deported to other European countries. And of course, here in Ireland, we had one of their close associates, Sean McGovern, extradited as well. So although they may be enjoying life there, they have the financial assets, the lavish lifestyles, they are still under pressure. And of course, we have the ongoing investigations into their activities from the Garda National Drugs and Organised Crime Bureau.
Now, John, how have their activities in Ireland changed since the Regency?
Well, I interviewed Detective Superintendent Dave Gallagher of the Garda National Drugs and Organised Crime Bureau, and he talked about how they controlled drugs at one point from South America right to street level here. But the landscape has changed so much in recent years and they've adapted to that. So Daniel Kinahan in particular is involved with essentially the bulk transportation of cocaine from South America into Europe at a much higher level. And you hear Gardaí talk about networks now. It's no longer kind of cartels having grips on major areas. It's more so cartels working together and facilitating each other and their contacts to.
So are they still selling into Ireland, for example, using lower level people?
Essentially, they're involved with the major shipments.
So are they the wholesalers, in other words?
Essentially, yeah, with other gangs as well, though. You often hear about the primary gang who kind of stepped up in Ireland and took over from them, and they're called the Family, and they're the primary drug distributors here. But as I said, they're all kind of mucking in together, financing in together and working together in terms of facilitation through different ports, through corruption of people and so on.
Now, is it your understanding that, before the Regency, when they were actually running the foot soldiers as well as doing the importation, they were more vulnerable to a sanction by the authorities here because they were involved at street level? Because they are no longer involved at street level, are they kind of immune almost from investigation?
No, I would disagree with that, Pat, because what you have are Kinahan representatives still in Ireland, people who have been loyal to the Kinahan leadership for years and years, who have been heavily immersed in organised crime. So they're still in Dublin. They haven't left Ireland. They're still involved in the illicit drug trade. They're still on the ground. They still have influence in different communities. But you will see nowadays where they're perhaps, in the past, they may have been working on their own, taking their directions from the Kinahan organisation. But because of their previous pedigree and their involvement and experience in organised crime, they are now working with other gangs, but still you have the Kinahan influence there because of the background and the experience. But nowadays you have them working with other gangs who have the monopoly on street level dealing.
And the question is, how secure are they? Because if they are small in number, although influential, people say, well, why is he getting a cut? That's mine.
Yeah, well, that's the issue that many people have as well, where they talk about the Kinahan influence, and maybe because they're not as influential as they were before, then people might try and muscle in and, you know, engage in their own activities. But I think we've seen since 2018, we've had no murders in the Kinahan-Hutch feuds, and we've seen the gradual dilution of the Kinahan influence in organised crime in Ireland. So, but people will still feel that they are a presence there, a strong presence, but there are other gangs who are willing to step in. But I think people have seen, as a result of the Garda action, especially after the Regency Hotel, in which they dismantled their hit teams, that people are reluctant to take up the gun now to protect their business.
Now, how did they do that? How did the Garda, you know, if they could do it then, it took an outrage like the Regency for a mobilisation of that kind of activity by the guards. If, you know, how have they operated since, the guards?
But what you saw after the kind of demise of the Kinahan cartel in Ireland and their control was a number of younger, reckless, more localised gangs trying to step into that void left behind. So you had the Coolock feud, for example, with lots of young men in their early 20s to mid-20s involved in this feud that claimed five lives. You also had the Kinahan-affiliated Mr. Flashy, Glenn Ward, who ran the so-called Gucci Gang, but they also stepped up and tried to take over large parts of West Dublin. But the Gardaí have stayed on top of those gangs. There's major operations against them. And also, these guys, we kind of give them too much credit at times because they do slip up and the guards are there to take them out. So, for instance, with Glenn Ward, Mr. Flashy, he was caught on camera with a gun at a New Year's Eve party and shooting into the air. These guys are being taken.
Was he just having, like, letting off steam, shooting a gun in the air and got nabbed for his pains?
Yeah, well, it was actually came down to when he was targeted in a taxi in a hit attempt, an attempt on his life. A phone was left behind in that taxi and the guards were able to seize that and go through it. And that's where the video actually emerged from over a year beforehand, I think the video was made. But they were able to bring charges against him then and he's behind bars. And he was a figure that was particularly dangerous and he lost a lot of associates. But he was able then to kind of mop up younger lads and teenagers and bring them into the gang and they would step up into that void there. So Glenn Ward in particular was a significant figure to take out.
Now, the authorities in Dubai and their attitude to people who live among them, who've got loads of money to spend and who also are presumably laundering their money in some way through either banks or maybe building developments in Dubai. What's their attitude to those kind of people?
Well, I think we've seen a change recently in the attitude of the Dubai authorities. And of course, we see the increased international cooperation. We've saw previous Garda Commissioner Drew Harris and senior figures in the Garda National Drugs and Organised Crime Bureau going to Dubai in the hope that building relationships and working with law enforcement there. But in the past, the Kinahans have been there since late 2016. That's their home. That's where they went there in the hope that there would be no extradition treaty. They were safe there. They regarded it as a safe haven. But Detective Superintendent Gallagher, when John interviewed him, talked about there is no safe haven for any criminals anymore, because we have seen in recent years where serious figures within organised crime from Holland, from Italy, and are being deported back to their own countries. And we've seen it ourselves with the Sean McGovern extradition. So I think that it's changing somewhat in terms of the cooperation.
Now, in the podcast, it is said all the DPP has to do is press a button and it'll happen. Why isn't the DPP pressing that button?
Because it's a lot more intricate than that. It's a lot more complicated. And essentially, the DPP have no timeline. They can take as long as they like to make a decision on this, get as much advice as they can or need to. So there is no timeline on that. But it is a significant file in relation to Daniel Kinahan on orchestrating or being over an organised crime gang, running an organised crime gang, and a second file in relation to the murder of Eddie Hutch, which he features in as well. And mm-hmm. Eddie Hutch, of course, was murdered 3 days after the Regency Hotel attack in 2016, and was Jerry the Monk Hutch's brother.
Okay, so the Kinahans, obviously they are wise to what's going on in the world. What contingencies do we know they are making in order to get out of there if the going gets tough?
Well, they've been accustomed to a very lavish lifestyle for many years. They went to Spain because they were concerned about the introduction of gangland legislation here in Ireland. Of course, then in Spain, you have the issue of the European arrest warrants. And then they went to Dubai, where there was no extradition treaty with Ireland.
So where's the next bolt hole?
That's now changed. So the next bolt hole could it be in Africa? Could it be in Iran? Could it be in Russia? But again, they're going to places where they mightn't have the same quality of lifestyle that they had in Dubai or elsewhere. So the world's a smaller place for them. There's no question about that. There's more increased cooperation now between law enforcement, so their choice will be very limited in where they can go. Mm.
So the podcast, it's three episodes, two have dropped today. What is the format?
Exactly. It's actually a 10-part podcast series over the next... So the first two were released today and four... over the next 4 weeks, there will be two every Wednesday. And we talk to a number of contributors, those at the heart of these operations to take down the Kinahan cartel hit teams, the Gardaí involved, Detective Superintendent Dave Gallagher, who was overseeing a lot of these live operations and intervening in these hit plots. But also we look to the future and talk to various people about what lies ahead, what could lie ahead. But also, it's such a vast story. We also go into the boxing element and how Daniel...
Is he finished in boxing?
Looking on a public level, I suppose a lot of it was about, washing his reputation, and it wasn't about money for him. And he lost a key man in that was Bob Arum. And I interviewed Bob Arum, and he features on an episode in this podcast as well. And Bob Arum basically catapulted Daniel Kinahan back to the top of the game with Tyson Fury, of course, his relationship there, and was almost wiped out within a couple of days after the US sanctions. There is talk that he is involved. Bob Arum insists that he's not back involved. So maybe on a personal level to these boxers and advising them in some capacity that way. But like, for instance, Bob Arum had paid him $8 million, I think, in those couple of years when he got Tyson Fury to come back into the game. I don't think he's earning any money from it these days.
Finally, Stephen, when the bounty was put on their head, it was during the Biden administration. We had a Democratic ambassador here who made the announcement about those bounties. Trump is a different kind of animal. We don't know what his real attitude is to drugs, because we saw the president of Honduras being pardoned by him after grievous drug offences, convicted in an American court. But equally, we've seen him lift Maduro out of Venezuela. Yeah. So do we know whether they are fearful of what Trump, that administration might do to them?
Yeah, I think we've seen in recent weeks, especially with the Maduro incident and also the Trump administration not being afraid to use the military might of the American army when taking out these drug ships as they cross the Atlantic. So we're only a year into the Trump administration. No one knows what's going to happen one day to the next with this administration. So is drugs at the top of their agenda? I think it is somewhat, in terms of, because the Americans would always talk about how the concerns that they have with the drugs from South America going and ending up in USA on the streets there. And then, of course, if you have the administration from before the Biden directly linking Daniel Kinahan to South American crime gangs, indeed Russian gangsters as well, and gangsters in Mexico. So will the Trump administration take the same approach? I think it will. And again, and it'll all come down again to the Gardaí and the Department of Justice building up and fostering relationships with the Trump administration.
And you'd wonder if there'd be bounty hunters. It's a lot of money that's available should anyone capture the Kinahans?
Yeah, well, in John's interview, Dave Gallagher had suggested that they were getting information and they were getting feedback in relation to the bounties. So it's a lot of money, and there could be people out there, people even within their inner circle, because there's no loyalty when it comes to criminality. So there are people who would know a lot of information about Daniel Kinahan, but whether or not they're willing to come forward and take this chance is a different matter.
And finally, John, is it still cocaine primarily, or have they dipped their toe in the fentanyl water?
No, it is still cocaine primarily, and obviously the cocaine market is booming, not only here in Ireland, but throughout Europe. It's a 13 billion euro market throughout Europe, and the demand for it doesn't seem to be stopping.
All right. Finally, where can people find the podcast?
On Apple, Spotify, and anywhere where they get their podcasts.
Very good. Kinahan's Downfall, the series is called. I thought it was three, but it's in fact ten part series. Two eps have dropped already today, and two every Tuesday thereafter. Stephen Breen, crime editor with the Irish Sun, co-author of Kinahan Assassins, with John Hand, crime correspondent for the Irish Sun as well. Thank you both very much for joining us in studio today.
Thank you. The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance.
Weekdays at 9 a.m. on News Talk.